Welcome to another episode of the Fender Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined today by Jenny Carlson and Barry Trammell. Guys, the Thunder finally has its head coach, a process that took longer than 2 months. The Thunder announced Wednesday that they were promoting Mark Daigneault from assistant coach to head coach. He was head coach of the Oklahoma City Blue in the G League for 5 years. He spent last season on Billy Donovan's staff. His connection with Donovan goes back to their Florida days, where he spent a few seasons in Gainesville under Billy Donovan. He is a UConn grad. He did not play college basketball, which is really interesting to me. Was a grad assistant under Jim Calhoun from Leominster, Massachusetts. I sure hope I'm pronouncing that right. And that's sort of the what we know about Mark Daigneault at this point, you all. So I just want to get first reactions. Jenny, what did you make when you saw that Mark Daigneault was going to be the guy?
Not a ton of surprise, Joe. I mean, I think is this search, Sam Presti said they did talk to a good number of potential candidates, but as the search stretched longer and longer and longer, I mean, next week the draft is here. There was just sort of a feeling that somebody internally was going to be the pick. Whether it was Daigneault or someone else, they had several possible.
Brian Keith
being another prime one. It seemed like a higher, like one of those two was going to be the pick. So not a ton of surprise, but he, you know, like you say, there's just not a ton of information, about Daigneault. He's, you know, got a fairly interesting road to this point, but It's not exactly storied. So we're going to be learning a lot more about him. And obviously this is his first NBA head coaching job. He coached in the D/G League. I still want to call it the D League, but so he has been a head coach. Clearly this is going to be a step up for him, a limited number of these jobs. And so, a guy that's only 35 getting that opportunity, a pretty big day for him.
Yeah. So the news became official Wednesday morning. He said he just recently found out. So it's a fast moving process. And we actually talked to him. We're recording on Wednesday afternoon, but they had his introductory press conference Wednesday morning. So we'll get to that. But Barry, what were your first reactions?
Well, I mean, if I would say that I knew someone like Daigneault was going to be hired. I had no clue it was going to be him. But somebody like him was clearly the path Sam Presti was traveling. Somebody inexperienced, relatively. Someone inexpensive. Someone well-known to the Thunder, but not high-profile nationally. I mean, that's just where the Thunder is as it rebuilds as a franchise. And getting someone with Thunder ties that or Presti ties, as it were, either one, that sort of knows what Presti's vision is and what he wants. You know, after you listen to Daigneault talk, and after you talk to Sam, it's you sort of realize, well, this is almost a natural.
Yeah.
But we knew it was going to be somebody like this. They weren't going to go hire Mark Jackson, or they weren't going to go hire Avery Johnson, or, you know, somebody with a lot of NBA coaching chops. There's just not any reason to do that right now. So Daigneault makes a lot of sense in terms of I did not have any idea that he was held in such high regard. I didn't have any idea of some of his backstory. I didn't know that when he got the Blue coaching job, he was not even a front row guy at Florida. Just a guy sits back there and doesn't even chart fouls. I don't know what he's charged. But anyway, it's a case of he's come a long way in a short amount of time. And, you know, early impressions were fantastic. I thought he was sensational to talk to. And, you know, that's what I'd heard about the guy. He's really relational, builds great relationships, seemed pretty down to earth. And so, I mean, I like what I've seen so far. And but to say I knew he was, you know, heavy in the mix, I can't admit that.
Yeah, you know, I think when we started our coaching search, we started with a couple of internal candidates.
Wait. You had him on the list, though.
He was on the list.
He was on the list, and you did a profile on him. So everybody up. That's what I got to say. Everybody up.
I remember when we initially did the 50 coaches list, and I think I asked you all, like, what, how confident are you that we got it? I was telling you, I was sweating it out a little bit when Will Weaver's name was being tossed around because he was not among the 50.
Now, it wouldn't have been the biggest faux pas in the history of Oklahoman coaching searches, I can tell you that.
Oh, goodness. So, you know, speaking of Weaver, he's really the only other name we heard in the search. You know, ESPN's report didn't make it clear that he was just coming from Australia to interview with the Thunder necessarily, but could be an assistant somewhere. But other than that, it was a very quiet search. The longer it went on, the longer it made sense to hire an internal candidate, I think. I mean, like you said, Jenny, the draft is next week. Training camp starts December 1st, and the season starts December 22nd. And I asked Presti about that, and he said that, you know, it had no bearing on the hire, that, you know, they don't take a short-term look at it. And I believe him when he says that, but also I think it's a very nice thing probably for them to have from a comfort standpoint of having someone that's been with the organization. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, one of the first things Dagnall said in his press conference was like the Thunder raised him. So it is very much, it's like they sort of groomed him for this position. And it makes sense in a lot of ways. Like, How important do you think it is, Jenny, that he has that experience in Oklahoma City with Donovan, with the G League, now coach the Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. The short term, I like you, Joe, I believe what Presti said, that, you know, it's not about surviving the next 3 months. But at the same time, you know, it sort of says to me that they knew all along they were going to make an internal hire, because if you're going to hire from outside, hiring somebody today who has, you know, maybe never stepped foot inside your building, that seems like a pretty risky proposition. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you could lure, you know, somebody. It would be really hard. I mean, yes, you're offering an NBA head coaching job. So if somebody is desiring that and thinking they're not going to, you know, come by that opportunity again anytime soon, maybe they take it, but man, I mean, you're learning everything. And, you know, to me, that's a really tough sell to an outside candidate. So I think it does, you know, Dagnall said that he was going to talk to coaches, the remaining assistants. They've obviously lost a few since Billy Donovan's departure. Some have gone to be with Donovan. But, you know, I have to think that he's going to be looking at guys that are already in the organization to fill a lot of those coaching spots. He's comfortable with them. He knows them. I mean, it may not be 100% retention, but you got to think that is you know, going to be a help to him to have some guys around that he knows and that know him. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely got to make these next couple months a ton easier for the head coach, for other coaches, and, you know, I think to some extent players who, you know, as you said, Joe, it's coming up fast and feels like they just got done. I mean, like, we haven't been out of the playoffs for very long here. So it is a tough turnaround for players that are used to, you know, letting their bodies rest a little bit and spend the off season, you know, getting geared back up. They're not going to have that. So to have somebody that they know in that position it's got to at least be a mental comfort to them.
Yeah.
Here's another thing. If you're going to hire a 35-year-old who 1 year ago was coaching the G League and 6 years ago was on the back of the bench in the SEC, and who not only didn't play in the NBA, but didn't even play college basketball, a guy like that could have a credibility problem. Mm-hmm. With seasoned NBA players. If you're going to hire somebody like that, it's got to be somebody they know, somebody they've been around, somebody they've come to like and respect. If you bring in the exact same, you know, the Mark Dagnall of Utah, whoever that is, I think that'd be a problem for Steven Adams and Dennis Schroeder and whoever else. They've been around Dagnall.
they can sort of get past that, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we've already seen two Thunder players sort of tweet congratulatory messages to Dagnall. Darius Bazley and Lu Dort both seem very pleased with the news. And those are two crucial guys for the Thunder moving forward and two guys you want to have on your side. You mentioned he's 35. I think it's fascinating that, you know, Nick Nurse being probably the prime example, going from G League head coach to NBA head coach. Obviously, that's worked out pretty well in Toronto and is maybe a good model to follow. But Nurse actually wasn't a G League coach in the Raptors organization. Dagnall was with the Thunder, and he's the first coach in history to be both the G League coach and NBA coach in the same organization. And I think that's really interesting that, you know, we've talked about the G League is so important developing players, and now it's developing coaches. Barry, what do you think about that path of taking that route, hiring a G League coach primarily?
I think it's something that Sam Presti takes a lot of pride in. He believes in the G League. He believes in the G League relationship with the parent team. Most NBA teams have a G League team. I think we're up to 28 or 29. Some of those are in the same city. Some are not. Some are spread across the country. But with the Thunder, they play across the street from each other. Their training facilities are 1, 2, 3, 4, about 4 miles apart. So a lot of interaction, a lot of interconnection. I think Sam likes to view it as one big organization, and he likes the idea of we talk a lot. Jacko today asked, I think she asked Dagnall about this, player development. Sam's into all kinds of development, scout development, analytic development, medical development. He's definitely into coach development too. Mm-hmm. And to me, he looks upon this as a Thunder success story today, being able to hire a guy who 6 years ago was sitting behind the bench in a Florida Auburn game. So he thinks that's pretty cool that the Thunder's been able to bring that along. And, you know, time will tell, you know, whether it works or not. But I think this is the kind of thing he sort of envisions for Thunderville.
Hey, Joe, one thing I said to you earlier today, and I'll repeat here, you know, obviously the G League is all about getting players better. And what I'm about to say is not some sort of prediction that Mark Dagnall is going to be a success as an NBA coach. But it's interesting to me that despite coaching 5 years in the G League in a setup where players getting better is the be all end all, he still had a pretty good record. Mm-hmm. They were still, as you mentioned, Joe, a playoff team all but one of his years with the Blue. So to me, you've got a guy that is widely known. We saw Bradley Beal, one of his Florida players, when he was there in Gainesville with Donovan, tweet out how happy he was for Dagnall to get the job, and the reason was he was his player development coach in college. So, you know, that is such a hallmark of how he rose through the ranks. And yet, for them to have won a decent amount of games, it says that he also has some coaching acumen, some X's and O's, some in-game ability. So, you know, it strikes me that if the Thunder is going down a, you know, reimagined path, I think that was it reimagining that Presti used today?
Some all kinds of R words in there.
Yeah, repositioning.
Yeah, one of his re words. If they're going down that road, which to me says dumping the expensive salaries and more than likely sending your best players somewhere else, they're going down that road, wins will be hard to come by. But, you know, we've seen guys come into organizations. Brett Brown strikes me as the prime example of a guy that came in a rebuild and stuck around for quite a while after the rebuild had built. And won a lot of games in Philadelphia. So I don't know what becomes of Mark Dagnall long term, but it's interesting to note that in addition to all the development stuff, that he actually did win some games in the G League with the Blue over the last, you know, during his tenure with the team.
Yeah, that's a good point. Presti described this as sort of like the right hire at the right time. And clearly the Thunder is entering a new direction, not expected to seriously compete next year, especially depending on what happens to the roster, but definitely the year or two after that. So it's like Mark Daigneault would not get the Clippers job, say, or even like the Pelicans job or the 76ers job, but the Thunder coming up through their ranks, entering a phase with not a lot of pressure, like it sort of makes sense. And to that point, you know, he's talked in the past about, sure, every coach deals with X's and O's and wants to have a good coaching philosophy and strategy, but he's talked a ton about the education part of coaching and sort of the player development. And Jenny, you asked him about this, and I thought it was interesting, sort of crediting his mom and I think his sister for being an education and sort of, you know, crafting his coaching style in a way based off, you know, what his parents and some of his family members do.
Yeah, I mean, and he's had, I think Barry mentioned this in something he wrote for Oklahoman.com, if not for a couple of things that we've written in the last couple of years about Daigneault, the book on Mark Daigneault would be extremely thin right now.
Be written.
but yes, I mean, he said, you know, mom is a lifelong educator. His sister has gone into it too. And, you know, while he did say at one point in something we wrote that, you know, he loves the strategy, but more than anything, he loves the teaching side of coaching. And so I think that does reflect back on, you know, growing up in a home where, you know, he was raised by an educator. He said his dad was sort of his example of hard work. And so, you know, to meld those two, I think you start to get a clearer picture of where he's come from and why he is where he is and what he is. But, you know, it's sort of the, you know, you think about like a high school coach or something. You know, we talked today about you just really got to get to know your guys, and it's really about the relationships, and then you can work through, you know, what do they need to improve on. You know, it sounded like he could, you know, easily be getting ready to, you know, teach a 6-hour chemistry class and then go off and do varsity basketball practice. It's just kind of that, you know, high school coach mentality that he seems to have that I think aligns pretty closely with that education mindset.
And the coaching family, I don't know if you guys knew this and I just didn't, but his wife, Ashley, is actually a volunteer assistant with OU Gymnastics, which I thought was really cool. So
it's very, I mean, I've known that since like 10:30. So, I mean, I'm a learned man on the history of Mark Daigneault. She's not listed on the OU website. So, you know, he probably wasn't listed on the Florida website when Sam hired him. So that's the way it goes.
I think she actually is going by her maiden name. She's a volunteer coach, according to the,
Yeah, I actually found her on Center Sports.
Her. Well, and she actually has a bio. I went and looked at it, and she she was a gymnast at Florida, which their women's gymnastics program is very good. Then she was an assistant there. I'm sure that's where they met. And then when when Mark got the job here, she moved here. She's a volunteer assistant with the women's gymnastics team at OU.
Well, there you go. Ashley
Kerr. I know more about her than I would have ever imagined knowing by this time today. I mean, when I woke up this morning, no idea.
I can guarantee you that is a story we will be writing at some point, hopefully soon, and more about Mark Daigneault because, you know, we're learning about him just as everyone else is. So looking forward to getting to know him a little bit better. But I thought it was, you know, a really nice introductory press conference to get to know him a little bit more. The Thunder, we hardly ever get to talk to their assistant. So even though he's been with the organization, haven't talked to him a ton besides when he was coach of the G League. But just a couple more points. He said that he was asked about staffing, and we've touched on it a little bit. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much of the current staff they bring back. My guess would be quite a few of those staff members. One that won't be coming back is Mo Cheeks, who's going to join Billy's staff in Chicago. But especially we've talked about stability. It makes sense that they would have some of those guys come back. They've worked together before, but don't know who else is going to be added to his staff.
Who are the candidates? We got Brian Keefe. We got Vinny, Vin Bavnani.
Yeah,
Dave Bliss. Who else is a candidate?
David Akinyoye.
By the way, anytime we say Dave Bliss, we mean the young, tall Dave Bliss, not the Dave Bliss of OU, Baylor, SMU, New Mexico infamy. So, Dave Bliss.
Also, Mike Will. So there's a few options there.
Yeah, and I assume that with the way that the Thunder has guys who aren't, I mean, they're like every NBA team. They've got a lot of guys either doing film or scouting or player development. I mean, I'm using air quotes on our podcast, which is ridiculous, but it's also like what they do. Like, they're not full-time assistants, but in sort of the way that, you know, Mark Daigneault went from doing player development to coaching, it's not that big of a jump. So my guess is they've got plenty of internal possibilities to fill all the full-time staff spots, but it may be that you're looking at, you know, there might be a video guy that gets a bump that has coaching. So it will be interesting to see, though, if they, you know, and they do have some of these past players that are, you know, in the organization. I wonder if any of those guys might potentially get a shot if they want it. I mean, I know it sounds like a guy like Nazi Muhammad probably looking more towards front office work long term. So I don't know. It's just interesting. I figure there are some guys that may not have even been on the bench last year that might be possibility.
Well, Eric Maynor is a classic example. He was like a volunteer with the Blue or whatever.
Yeah, whatever he was. An assistant coach with the Blue.
There you go. So, you know, guys like, a lot of guys like that. So,
yeah.
By the way, this seems like a good enough time for St. Joe, or maybe Jacko, anybody but me, to give me and our listeners an excellent, excellent lesson on how you pronounce the last name of the Thunder's new coach. So I've gone about four different directions since 9:30 this morning. So I'm sitting here with bated ears.
Well, Joe, you want to take a run at it?
I need to make a few calls on this, because the Thunder in their pronunciation guide have capital D-A-Y-G, Daigneault, N-A-L-T. But when Sam Presti introduced him, he said Daigneault, which is not how I would pronounce D-A-Y-G. Maybe it's the Boston accent coming through. I don't know. But I've heard Daigneault and Daigneault. I'll go with Daigneault because that's what I've heard. But Jenny, what say you?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, Joe. I went back and looked at my our release from earlier today, and Daigneault would seem to be the way that the pronunciation guide.
Correct.
So, Daigneault? How about that, Barry?
So, what I got here is a split decision.
I think you get to make the choice.
We got a 4-4 Supreme Court. We need another nomination to the court to decide this. My only problem. Me and St. Joe talked about this. I actually disapprove of the hire because it's a very difficult name to type.
It's hard to spell.
I know how to spell it, but for whatever reason, there's a few words when you put them together. It doesn't come easy with your typing. It sort of is not a natural fit for your typing fingers. So maybe his career will be short-lived, and Mark Jackson or somebody will be the replacement.
I have a feeling you'll be giving him a nickname very soon, though.
I don't know. Daigneault, I don't know.
Can I?
You know what? I will say this. I mean, Wheel of Fortune would be a pretty good. That's a lot of vowels and a lot of consonants right there on the board. So, Wheel of Fortune might be the best nickname I can come up with.
Can I just admit to something? I'm working on my column before we started, and I am cutting and pasting the new coach's last name, however you say it.
Well, there you go.
So for
labor intensive. Hey, how about that? That's a good nickname, labor intensive.
Cut and paste. Let's call him cut and paste.
MD. MD.
Yeah, the doc.
Wonder what his middle name is. Either of you investigative reporters know his middle name yet?
Apparently, I didn't even have a Wikipedia page until this morning. I don't know if you were.
Is that when it started? I guess. Apparently,
made it this morning.
Yeah, I looked it up. When I looked up his Wikipedia page at like 10 o'clock, it had literally one sentence.
Wow.
I had to double check to confirm his age because I couldn't find it anywhere, but he is 35, the same age as Chris Paul, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yes.
That is crazy.
Speaking
I got a sport coat older than 35 years old.
Anything else we're missing? Anything else stand out from his introductory press conference? Any Dagnall related things we need to touch on?
In all seriousness, he did seem like a really personable,
he did,
connectivity type guy. And that's one thing Sam sort of trumpeted. And that certainly came across in the press conference. It's a crazy world. We're doing press conferences by Zoom. Me and Jacko certainly have never been around this guy to any at all. Maybe the Thunder beat writers over the last 3 or 4 years may have spent a little, 10 minutes with the guy doing a story that connected with the Blue. So, we're jumping to early conclusions. However, he certainly was billed as a guy with the ability to connect with people, and that came across on the Zoom. Does that translate to real life? We'll see, but it certainly was a positive kickoff to in my mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. He seemed very humbled by the opportunity, to be honest, and just, talked about how cool it was that how many players and Thunder staffers and fellow assistants have reached out to him in the last there. So I think he said that Sam Presti just announced the hire internally not too long ago, and it seems like his interview process wrapped up not too long ago either. So I was going to write the story. What was it like to conduct a virtual coaching search and then they ended up hiring someone internally? I guess who knows how many external candidates they actually interviewed, but ended up going back to an in-house promotion, which is kind of what we might thought was going to happen at the beginning of this thing. So kind of, it took a long time, but the end hire wasn't all that surprising, I don't think.
I thought the one thing that was interesting and I'm sure that the question was asked to try to figure out what is going on with Chris Paul, but the fact that Dagnall, yeah, okay. Now I'm totally thinking about it. Dagnall said that he did talk to Chris Paul today. He said something about Chris being very busy, and then Sam laughed sort of weirdly. I don't know if that was some sort of like, yeah, we all know Chris is busy, or yeah, he's busy because the Suns are trying to trade for him. I'm not sure what that meant exactly, but I did think that was interesting that at least – there was a conversation between the Thunder point guard and the new head coach. So what that means for the future, I have no idea, but I did think that was interesting.
Yeah, he said that he held back on calling some players because it was early this morning and they didn't want to wake him up. But he did end up calling Chris Paul, and he said they had a short conversation, but yeah, he made the joke that, hey, me and Sam are pretty busy, but we're not this busy as Chris Paul, which, like, trade or not, it's pretty true. I mean, Chris is wrapped up in a ton of things, but they at least talked. He said he's grateful for Chris and looks forward to working with him, which I'll pivot that forward. You mentioned the Suns. ESPN reported Tuesday night that the Suns and the Thunder have had talks surrounding Chris Paul. In that report, there was no Phoenix names listed, but there are sort of obvious trades that you could cobble together to make that work. I think the Thunder, as they did with previous stars, they would work to get him to a place that he would want to play. I don't think they're just going to ship him off anywhere just because the trade makes sense for them. And apparently Chris is interested possibly in playing in Phoenix. It's much closer to his home in Los Angeles, I think like a 5-hour drive or so. That's fascinating. Play alongside Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. Suns missed the playoffs, but they went 8-0 in the bubble. It's fascinating to think about because, you know, we know Chris is going to be on the move at some point. I wasn't sold that it was going to be this offseason or even at the trade deadline. But Barry, what do you make of that report of the Thunder and Suns potentially in talks for Chris Paul?
Makes a lot of sense from a Phoenix standpoint, especially if they give up Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre and maybe a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, it looks like it would be Oubre, Rubio, and maybe you flop 25 for 10 in this draft.
Yes. I would like it from a Phoenix standpoint. I would not like that from a Thunder standpoint for this reason. I don't know that Kelly Oubre or Ricky Rubio has any long-term value to the Thunder. And the number 10 overall pick doesn't do a whole lot for me. I'd rather get a lottery pick that could go higher, especially coming from Phoenix, a perpetually inept franchise. So I would think Phoenix would jump at that trade. Even though I will say, you know, I've seen a lot of speculation about whether Chris Paul on the Suns would turn them into a contender, and I think the answer is yes, would turn them into a contender to make the playoffs, not to win the West. People lost their minds. So, I guess from an Oklahoma City perspective, I would hope the Thunder could get a little bit more. That's what I would say.
What do you make of a potential deal with Phoenix, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just going to be sort of until Chris Paul is traded, this is probably going to be the norm, you know, that their trade scenarios, because I think what this last year did was reopen some eyes to people that, of what Chris Paul could bring to a team, especially one with a young core, with hopes of, you know, developing a collection of talented players into a potential, you know, playoff team that can win some games. So, you know, to me, there's a lot of value. And so a lot of these teams that we've seen that have expressed some interest, you know, like the Knicks and some other ones, they generally have that type of makeup, some really good young players, but maybe not that veteran that can, you know, sort of elevate them. But I'm with Barry. I mean, even I saw today that there's a report, I can't remember who's had it, but report out that James Harden and Russell Westbrook are concerned about the immediate future of the Rockets. Yeah, no kidding. They traded away the guy that they built their entire system around that brought those two together. Of course they'd be concerned. So what does that mean? I mean, does that mean they might be on the move? Might they stay in the West? You know, might some other teams, you know, look different? I don't know. I'm with Barry. I don't think it immediately elevates the Suns to some sort of rarefied air in the West, but I do think that Booker and Ayton are really good, and if you added in Chris Paul like we saw Chris Paul last year, I think it would make for some really interesting basketball in Phoenix.
If the trade, and again, this is not reported, but if the trade is Kelly Oubre, Ricky Rubio, and number 10 for Chris Paul and number 25, I would do it in a heartbeat if I was the Thunder. Because you're getting off Chris Paul's contract. You know, Rubio, I think, could be rerouted somewhere. I mean, there's contending teams that I think would be interested in Ricky Rubio, if not as a starter, but as one of the best backup point guards in the league. Oubre is really interesting. Maybe he's someone you want as part of your future, but who knows? I mean, but even without banking on that, you're still moving up 15 spots. You're still getting off Chris Paul's contract, and I don't know how bad he's itching to leave Oklahoma City, but if he is, that could potentially turn into a messy situation. Now, he handled last year with the utmost class, I thought, and there's no reports of him being disgruntled at all. But no, I don't think it turns Phoenix into a contender. I think they'd be contending much more for the 7 and 8 seed than even the 4 or the 5, just with what the West is going to look like. And, you know, I know it is closer to home, but I was very sort of surprised. I think it was Brian Windhorst from ESPN reported that Chris is interested in Phoenix. They've not had good ownership. They've got a new general manager in James Jones. They're building a new facility. So maybe that's intriguing and a good young core. But yeah, I think it's fascinating to consider that possibility. And I think the Thunder, just to move this forward a little bit, as we're recording this podcast, Mikal Bridges, who the Thunder would love in a trade with Phoenix, he's a solid two-way player, just finished the second season. He tweeted a series of eye emojis, kind of a la Lincoln Riley. So who knows what that means, but maybe Mikal Bridges knows something. But he's like your ideal 3-and-D guy, super long, league average shooter. So you'd hope he develops a little bit more. But he was the 10th pick 2 years ago.
You think this trade could happen with Bridges instead of Oubre? Rubio and Bridges, would that work?
I think you need Oubre's contract to make it work, but I think you could add in, you could do Oubre and Bridges, and it still works.
Well, I'm a little bit more excited then if you get a good young player like Bridges. Although we need one of the Bridges in Oklahoma City. The one at Phoenix and the one at Charlotte, I can't keep them straight. So if one of them's playing in front of me 82 nights a year, then I'll be able to keep them straight. So we need to make that happen.
I could not get the Morrises straight, even though we had one here.
They can't keep themselves straight. Literally, as we speak, Jacko, I have no idea right now which one played for the Lakers and which one played for the Clippers.
Played for the Lakers and the Thunder.
Markeith played for the Lakers. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. When Barry said that, I thought, I think I know the answer, but I was not going to say it out loud. But Joe,
this is not an absence thing. During the playoffs, I couldn't keep it straight. While I'd watch the Clippers one night, the Lakers the next, and I'd sit there and think, now which one of these guys is this? I saw the other one last night, but I can't keep it straight.
Yeah. Well, back to the Bridges. So for those not familiar with him, he averaged 9.1 points per game last year in his second season, played 73 games, made 32 starts, was a 36% three-point shooter. He is a 6'6 small forward, super long wingspan, sort of a Presti prototype player. So that would be really interesting. Another player the Thunder might ask for is Cam Johnson, who was Phoenix's first-round pick last year out of North Carolina.
I liked him.
He can really
shoot. A Carolina man, if I remember.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe if Phoenix perhaps throws out like the Oubre Rubio number 10 offer, maybe you try to counter with Bridges or Johnson, which if you had either of them, they're still on their rookie contracts and the money works either way. So cool to think about that. I mean, this stuff is all going to hit at once, right? The trade moratorium is going to be lifted next week, a day or two before the draft. The draft's next Wednesday. And then free agency is going to start a day or two after the draft. So, like, the roster could look different this time next week, potentially.
Yeah.
Speaking of another trade, this was actually reported before the Chris Paul news, but that the Jonathan Givony, who's a draft expert for ESPN, he reported that the Thunder is interested in moving up for the number one pick. And this caught me way more surprise than even the Chris Paul move does. And, you know, I wrote a story the other day laying out three scenarios. The first is if Minnesota wants Chris Paul, which there's no indication they do, but it would be Chris Paul, and I just threw out three first-round picks, and Hamidou Diallo. Second option, this was mentioned several places, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the number one pick, which I think is a hard no for the Thunder. Third option, the Thunder moves up in the draft, perhaps to number 8 or 10, where New York and Phoenix are taking, in a Chris Paul trade, and then moves up to number one. So this Phoenix talk could have other effects. Like if the Thunder suddenly moves up to 10, it's a lot easier to move from 10 to 1 than 25 to 1. So if I think it's highly unlikely that the Thunder is drafting number one, But if they're going to, I think there's got to be a deal, almost a deal in place for Chris Paul to then move up to number one once you have that eighth pick. I know that might be a little confusing and a lot of hypothetical thinking, but it's fun to consider.
I don't see how the Thunder could move up from 10 to 1 without Chris Paul. To me, that's unless you trade.
They'd have to you could do, if they wanted a point guard, so you could do Schroeder. Probably isn't a good fit with Russell, but you could do Schroeder and two first-round picks, two future picks or something.
Well, yeah, maybe so. The problem you have with this draft is there's not anybody – there's no lottery pick that everybody loves. The top three players in general are Wiseman from Memphis and Anthony Edwards from Georgia and LaMelo Ball, and none of those are even – what I would say are can't miss stars. So you'd have to see something that most people don't see.
Exactly.
To really want to move up, which is why, by the way, Minnesota wants to move down and Golden State has been talked about moving down because it's not necessary. Usually if you're a good team like the Warriors or even a team with some talent like the Timberwolves, you see that if you get the overall number one pick, you look at it as a bridge between two eras and say, hey, we get us a foundational player here and we can keep this thing going a long time. There's no player in this draft that jumps out at you that says he can be that bridge. Maybe it will happen, but there's no reason to think that it necessarily will. Meanwhile, if it's a year Anthony Davis is number one, well then, yeah, you give anybody whatever it takes to get the number one pick.
Yeah, but then there's probably not a chance to trade up for the number one.
And they're not going to trade it. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I would be surprised if the Thunder, what is that, a week from today that the draft is? I mean, if they get the number one pick a week from today, that may be the most surprising thing of this whole offseason. I mean,
yeah,
way more surprising than Mark Daigneault is the – Daigneault? Yes. Daigneault is the new Thunder head coach. I mean, to me, that would be if that happens, like if we know they've got it before they draft, you almost wonder if, like, does Presti have another guy that he's eyeing, like some stealth overseas candidate that, like, I don't know. It feels like there's, like Barry said, of those guys that are sort of talked about as the best three, I don't know that I see Sam Presti being in love with any of those guys enough to trade away assets that could be something else later.
Barry, what would you tell the Timberwolves if they called and said, we'll give you the number one overall pick for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
I would think of my mother. Who, growing up, had all kinds of cool sayings that made no sense but are funny. Like, one of them is, go sit on a tack. Another is, may the good Lord take a liking to you. I think that's what I'd tell the Timberwolves. May the good Lord take a liking to you. Heck, we don't even know if that number one pick's going to turn out to be as good as SGA.
No.
Why would you do that? You know, why would you do that?
I mean, it's impossible to think this, but if Shea was in this draft, he could be the number one pick. Like, you would take the known commodity for sure.
Yes, yes. If you throw SGA into this draft, the number one pick would be SGA.
Yeah, he would.
So, no thanks.
Go sit on attack.
Yeah, go sit on attack.
Is that what you're saying too, Jenny? Go sit on attack. Is that what you're telling the Wolves?
I did not have that phrase in my back pocket before this moment, but – if that was an option, yes, I would tell them that.
Well, I'll say this, that it's still extremely difficult to make trades, even though we know Chris Paul could be on the move. So, you know, this could all be irrelevant by next Wednesday. The Thunder, there might not be a deal with Phoenix, almost surely won't be a deal with Minnesota. The Thunder has the 25th and 53rd picks in the NBA draft. So in the coming days, we'll sort of highlight the last 10 players to be selected at each of those spots. But just to wrap it up, Barry, I'll start with you. Like, what do you, I mean, we've outlined the timeline of this whole thing. I mean, Thunder basketball is going to be back in a little over a month. I mean, training camp in less than a month. Like, what are you most looking forward to, whether it's roster, coach, season? Like, what's intriguing you at this point?
I never thought I'd say this, but the most intriguing thing to me is the Chris Paul trade. How's it going to reshape the Thunder? I don't think, even if, you know, if they don't trade Chris, the team's going to be okay, but nothing special. I assume, now that's assuming they get nothing for Gallinari in a sign and trade. So I doubt, you know, even if Chris comes, I don't think they can make a playoff run. The West is just too tough. And, you know, just, I just think I'm sort of ready for the Thunder rebuild to get going, because it's coming. Might as well start it on a year when it's COVID and not all that many people can go to the ballpark. And it's going to be a small, a condensed season anyway, and everything else. So I'm just sort of ready to get moving on the rebuild and try to get it in line as quickly as possible with the progression of SGA.
What about you, Jenny?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the young players gave us such a teaser of what could be coming. You know, maybe not right away, because if you are without Chris Paul and Gallinari this season, I mean, clearly that changes dynamics for Lou Dort and Darius Bazley and SGA and all those guys. I mean, that's not as easy as it was last season for them. It just isn't. So there's going to be struggles in that, but there was just so much in the bubble with, you know, Bazley's development and obviously Dort's explosion onto the scene. I mean, just so many enticing and interesting things to sort of roll around in your head and think what's next. And, you know, clearly those three guys, you know, taken under Chris Paul's wing, and I think then them bound together, they have to recognize that whether it's in the next week or at the trade deadline, or, you know, there's sometime in the not too distant future that they become the core, that they're the guys that are at the center of what happens next for this franchise. And it's really going to be interesting to see what, even in this condensed offseason, what has that caused them to want to do, to work on, to try to become. And, you know, there's just so much upside in all of those guys. It's just really interesting to sort of imagine what we're going to see when they first come back. And then, you know, in another year, when we're sitting here a year from now, you know, what will we be saying about those three? It's really sort of fascinating to play out in your mind and think what they're going to do in the short and then ultimately the long term for this team.
Yeah. I think I'm most looking forward to the timing of the Chris Paul trade, whether that's before the season. I mean, it's going to be quick if that's the case, whether it's at the trade deadline or even before next season as he's entering the final year of his contract. And with that, you know, we talked about possible ways, but unlikely ways of trading up to the number one pick. Like, eventually there's going to be really interesting decisions. The Thunder has 13 first round picks over the next 7 years, and you're not going to take a player at every one of those picks. And how do they maneuver that, whether it's packaging maybe three of those for a number one pick in the future or for a star player as your young guys continue to develop and someone that can fit that timeline. So I think that'll be interesting. This is going to be, you know, one of the most weird years of Thunder basketball, not only because of COVID and the fan situation, but also just like for the first time, I think fans are, you know what's coming and know that a rebuild is on its way with the Thunder being so successful in the last decade. So I'm looking forward to it. Next week, hopefully we'll be back doing this, talking about a potential Chris Paul trade. For sure, talking about the NBA draft, the newest member of the Thunder, wherever that player gets selected. But thank you guys so much for listening to the latest episode of the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we will talk to you next week.